Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
Nicholas of Cusa, the person who developed the idea of learned ignorance, the fact that man didn't know everything and knowledge was, well, basically as we see it today, as scientific rather than... I suppose he had derived... It's fairly complicated. It's on the cusp of the medieval and the ancient philosophy and on the cusp of our modern Renaissance and Enlightenment. So he's a critical person to talk about. And I was considering doing a standard podcast where I just introduced him through various stories, had a various angle on him. But really... that doesn't do him justice. And I looked at various things and I've come up with a strategy which does a couple of things, and that's just reading from the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. And you can Google this and read along with me and check whether it's okay, or you can listen to this in your car or whatever. And I'm going to do various episodes because, you know, I printed it out expecting it to be 3 pages and it's 40 pages. So I don't know how long it will go, but it's well worth it because this man has produced a ton of work, had a ton of life experiences, and there are some things which I think are just not easily summarized, or they're summarized only after a lot of effort. It's sort of like... tell us about your holiday. Well, you've got to have your holiday first and go and have that little individual experience. You just can't sort of like go into marine world or one of these theme parks, going on the best ride ever, screaming ever, and getting over and done with 5 minutes. There's a whole lot of other structures which build up to the excitement. Okay, so it's Cusanus Nicholas, common Nicholas, or Nicholas of Cusa. Very important man to me, and this was first published in 2009 and revised last year, substandard last year. And I was going to read a few pages from it, stop when I get a bit tired, have a break, and have this in several podcast volumes. And the idea is for my cardiac rehab to be able to read in an interesting manner. And not mumble. Oh, I hate to mumble. Okay, arguably the most important German thinker of the 15th century, Nicholas of Cusa, 1401 to 1464, was also an ecclesiastical reformer, administrator, and cardinal. His lifelong effort was to reform and unite the universal and Roman Church. Whether as canon law expert at the Council of Basel, and after as a legate to Constantinople, and later to the German diocese and the houses of religion as bishop in his own diocese of Brixen and as advisor in the papal curia. So let's just unpack that a little bit. It's a podcast, I'm reading, but there's a podcast. There's a Roman Church and the Universal Church. So at this stage... there was an idea of sort of a larger church. Does it include the Roman and Eastern Church? Does it include the Roman Church, Eastern Church, and Islam? So he was thinking about that. And there's a series of things where he's an advisor, a legate. This is a legal representative. And he goes on to be various cardinal and bishops, and then he goes out to his own region as actual functioning bishop. So this is pretty amazing stuff. A really well-educated person who's come across. His active life as a church administrator and bishop found written expression in several hundred Latin sermons and more theoretical backgrounds in his writings on ecclesiology, ecumenism, mathematics, philosophy, and theology. Now, this is the amazing thing, is that he is a mathematical thinker. He describes theological things in terms of maths, but it's all mixed together. You know, maths, theology, philosophy is all mixed together because it hasn't evolved into these separate disciplines at this point in time. So this is where it's really, really fascinating. Cusanus had an open and curious mind. He was a humanist and scholastic learning. Now, scholastic learning is the medieval type of learning where you go through line by line and attribute things, and it's either true or not. And if it's got a tick by the Pope, it's automatically true. If you've got two contradictory true statements, that's room for you to actually change the way that you're thinking. It's pretty amazing stuff. Yet mostly self-taught in philosophy and theology. Nicholas anticipated many later ideas in mathematics, cosmology, astronomy, experimental science, while conducting his own original versions of systematic Neoplatonism. It's sort of Plato is sort of like we're all in one big divine matrix type of thing, and Neoplatonism is adding Christianity into that general idea of Plato. It's really interesting. A whole range of earlier medieval writers, such as Terry of Chartres, Ramon Llull, Albert the Great, influenced Nicholas, but his important intellectual roots are in Procris and Dionysius of Areopagite. I don't know all these people, and I don't know whether it's. I think he's a really important person to. Nicholas is an important person to look at, to interpret, because these other things are a bit hard to get your mind around. In spite of his significance, few later thinkers, apart from Gordiano Bruno, understood or were influenced by him until the late 19th century. That is profound. So Bruno is someone just to love as a philosopher, and I'm still trying to understand why he sort of almost got himself killed by and burnt at the stake, Bruno, and he got away and offended people. But he is this link. So there's this main strand of people which are all okay. It's they're in the textbooks. There's these other thinkers like Nicholas de Cusa and Bruno to go across. So Bruno's a fantastic man. I just can't. He's the most entertaining, easily the most entertaining person in that period of history around Galileo. He sort of outshone everyone in his nerdiness. He was really, basically a Sheldon in medieval times. And then late 19th century, this is amazing stuff. Nicholas de Cusa really had the right set of really interesting ideas which were taken off by the philosophers. Late 19th century is code for modern science, my friends. Section 1, biography. So we're just going to do that's the introduction to biography, this one. Nicholas of Cusa. Okay. Nicholas Cusanus is his Latin name. Was born in 1901 in Cluses, now Bern Castel Cluses, on the Moselle River between Clobenz and Tyr. It's something to you Germans, I think. He was one of four children in a bourgeois family. His father, Johann Kreifitz, was a prosperous merchant who became one of the land and gentry near Tyr. The first record we have of Nicholas's early education come from his study of liberal arts at the University of Heidelberg. 1416-17, i.e. he's just a high school student as far as we can be concerned. He then moved to the University of Padua, where he studied canon law, receiving a doctor in canon law in 1423. In Padua he met a physician of the name Paolo Toscolini, at the canonist Giulio Cesarini, and humanist Giaro Verona and Vittorio del Feltre. Now, these are people that I really don't know. So when I come across them, I'll know how they're linked together. In 1425, he entered the service of the Archbishopship of Tyr, and as his secretary received income from several beneficiaries. By 1426, he was in Cologne, where he may have lectured on canon law, studied philosophy and theology, and began researches into original source material into the annals of German law. What a fantastic thing to do. There he was able to prove that the donation of Constantine was an 8th century forgery, and he found manuscripts of Pliny's Natural History and on Plautus' Comedies. Wow. But this is a really important thing, that donation of Constantine. I've just done a podcast on it. In Cologne, he met Heinrich of Campo, who introduced him to the writings of Ramon Llull, Albert the Great, and his commentary on... Sorry, it's windy out here. A commentary on Dionysus and Proclus's commentary on Plato's Parmenides. Now, this, you know, really, you could really get into it, but I think it's a real good point to just, let's see what he said out of this. He's such an important person. In 1828 to 1835, Nicholas was offered positions teaching canon law at the University of Louvain, but he turned them down to remain in church administration. Ordained a priest sometime during the 1430s, Nicholas first gained wider notice for his work as a counsellorist at the Council of Basel. Now, this is interesting stuff. There he wrote the Concordia Catholica in 1433, arguing the authority of the council over that of the Pope and stressing the notion of consent and representation. So this, remember, democracy that we call democracy, there's democracy that the Greeks had, which was sort of like a very, didn't include women, didn't include slaves, it was a democracy. He got more of a principle behind it. It's really interesting. After the turmoil at Basel split the council, Nicholas ultimately sided with the papal party and left the Consiliarist. Now, you can imagine, knowing that the Rome was based on fraud, you go ahead. In 1437, he was part of the embassy sent to Constantinople to seek reconciliation of the Greek church with Rome. Okay, he knows it's a fake. He knows the split is bad. Let's see if we can get these together. He reported that during the voyage home, the insights del Doctor Ignorata. So that means of learned ignorance. This is the basis of modern science. Came to him as a kind of divine revelation. He continued as a papal legate to Germany in 1438 to 48, named cardinal in 1446 by Eugenius the Fourth. Canos was elevated to that position by Nicholas the Fifth, and was sent to Germany in 1851 as a papal legate to reform the church. This is mind-bending stuff. So he's really important in terms of the way that he's linked to the other medieval thought. Think it's like these medieval thoughts are there. Well, how do they come to the future time? Well, they were linked through him and bypassed everyone into modern science. Nicholas' most important philosophical works were written in the 20 years between the appearance of Del Doctor in Ignorati and his death. Del Connectiaris, and these will be announced later on, De Dato Patris Illuminum, Apologia Doctor Ignorati, Idiata means Idiata de Sapientia. I can't pronounce that properly. Idiot means a layman. There you go. the Latin for a layman, someone who's not learned, is an idiot. There you go. Idiot dementa, idiot de status experimentus, were among his important work from a decade from 1440 to 1450. So he's got another 14 years after he parks it. As many sermons and works on mathematics. And it's just to see this mathematical mind is just extraordinary. The final 14 years of his life saw the appearance of the God's vision, De Bellero. I sort of understand what that is in Latin. You can see how bad my Latin. De Postis, Del Il Non Alud. Del Ludo Globi, Del Ventari Sapienari, so I know sapien means wise, wisdom, Compendium, De Apis Theora, more works on mathematics and many more sermons. Can you imagine his sermon? He would be an amazing sermon person. I'd be the only person paying attention because it would be on maths. Of particular note are two works he wrote during these years that reached out to other religions, especially Islam. De Pace Fidele and Cabriato al Coronani. So significant works. And the fact that he's thinking between philosophy and maths is just great. And this is someone, maths hasn't taken root in the world. So if you walked out, there'd be nothing mathematical in the road. There'd be no straight roads. Everything would be bent, bespoke. There'd be nothing manufactured. Be nothing to suggest maths to you. Today, you pick up a box, you're picking up a manufactured rectangle, you know, pick up your cornflakes. Every experience you have nowadays, injection molded, things are repeated. It's so, everything around you, I just look around, is maths, maths, maths. But his world was maths free, yet he was able to use maths in this religious form. In 1450, he was named Bishop of Brixton at Treorle. In 1452, he began active administration of Brixton, but his attempts to reform led to threats and clashes with Sigismund, the Count of Treorle. Many of his over 200 sermons date from his time in Brixton, and though his reform efforts there and earlier in Germany mostly failed. So he was a failure. I sort of love that because I think success is overrated. Failure is an amazing thing. So if he succeeded, he'd stop. But because he failed, he kept on producing this stuff. Nicholas finally retreated from conflict in Brixton to Rome, where he remained in the papal curia advising Pope Pius II. He died in 1664 in Todi on his way from Rome to Ancona. I've actually visited Ancona, but I've got no recollection where it is. This is interesting. His remains were buried in the titular church, St. Peter's in Chains at Rome. His heart was sent to Cluses and buried in a chapel, that's his hometown, in a hospice for elderly men, that he endowed in his will. The hospice survives, and his remarkable library is housed there today. So you've got all this history going on and burning books and stuff like that. He actually embedded his history in an old person's home, gave him money, and these people who were didn't understand anything of it said, well, these are these books of this famous man, and they've kept him through all these wars, Protestant revolutions, Nazi bombings, all these things. Well, they knew about it before then. And so that's another remarkable thing, that the fact that this particular person squirreled up his imagination and stuff, and it's embedded in something which is not mainstream. And I think at the moment, everyone wants to be on YouTube or on Twitter or something like that, get mainstream. This person was ignored, and being ignored, he worked harder and harder. And then what a fantastic thing. Coming to the end of your life, you say, well, I've got all this, I'm going to put through here, and as part of the value that I'm giving the value of my works and the library to go through. I don't know, I haven't read enough, but I doubt that it was a engrandment. It was just a simple way. If you read his works, you sort of get that view. So that ends this podcast at 18 minutes, and the next one, podcast will be Nicholas's thoughts. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.